Hello to everyone, and thank you for your interest. This is the Von Tobel Quality Growth Emerging Markets Podcast. I'm Ben Falcone, Client Portfolio Manager of Von Tobel Quality Growth, and I'm accompanied by Jin Jiang, one of Quality Growth's Emerging Markets Portfolio Managers. Welcome, Jin, and thank you for joining again for our first podcast of 2021.
Thanks, Ben.
So, Jin, as we stand here, you know, at the time of this recording, towards the end of March, EM has had a positive start to the beginning of the year after a very strong, you know, 9-month run to end 2020. However, lately, you know, there's rising interest rates and that's curtailed some of the stronger performance. I would say that has occurred kind of up to about mid-February of this year for emerging markets. And you're starting to see value, you know, with a little bit of a resurgence, and as well as momentum type stocks are starting to take a backseat after such a strong run last year. So that being said, in general, Jin, how do you feel about emerging markets? How have they fared during the pandemic, would you say? And how do you feel about their future potential versus developed markets going forward?
As you know, Ben, EM is a very large and diverse set of countries. In the COVID fight, basically the East Asian countries did reasonably well, while the rest of EM did much worse. Some countries, you know, in fighting the COVID impact, they had to add a lot of government debt. Now, with the vaccines becoming available, recovery is basically underway, or at least in sight in emerging markets. You know, East Asia, LATAM, and the rest of EM, I think will all benefit from the vaccines and see better growth going forward. If you think from the perspective relative to DM, which, by the way, also added a lot of government debt, EM still has structural growth as a tailwind. You just need to bear in mind the differences in all these different countries, and more importantly, the businesses, and pick and choose the best companies.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. The market is really, instead of focusing on this kind of normal type of recovery around the world in a very similar timeline, clearly there are some countries that are at a different pace than others. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned about businesses, right? Where do you feel you'll see the biggest improvement in business fundamentals post-COVID? And do you think the market has priced this in, or do you think you're still seeing opportunities out there to be had?
There are definitely businesses that have come through the tough patch of COVID hit and actually strengthened their position. One example I can give is Yum China. They run the KFC and Pizza Hut franchises in China. When the COVID hit, the in-store visits were down, you know, massively. It was down like 30% year over year. But they ramped up their delivery business very meaningfully. So they ended the year with 300 million of customers in their membership. That's up 25% year over year. That's a very good example of a business that by doing the right thing, getting closer to customers, they actually came through in a better position. Elsewhere in the consumer space, you easily have companies that, for example, you know, occupied good niche markets like a cha-cha food in the snack business in China, Holy Bread, they do fresh bread. These companies did really well. And outside of consumers, you have the Indian IT services companies, for example. They overcame the COVID challenge and are in a better position. So many of these opportunities, I feel, are still underappreciated. Their valuation is actually still reasonable relative to their long-term growth.
And do you feel like these are the better opportunities, Jin, or do you see like businesses that really haven't maybe managed or able to kind of make that transition, but yet still have upside? Are there any businesses like that that you think are good opportunities, or it sounds like maybe the preferences for ones that have kind of stemmed the tide and still have the opportunity going forward?
I do see opportunities on sort of the more value side, if you will. There are, for example, these beer companies. One name I can give is Bud APAC. They have the Budweiser franchise in Asia Pacific. They are bringing all these good global brands such as Budweiser, Corona, Stella, these brands to Asia Pacific. And there, people are upgrading their consumption. They are going to the premium beers. And a company like Budweiser APAC is well positioned. Their earnings are actually still depressed by the COVID impact, but going forward, the growth should recover meaningfully.
So it seems like, you know, a combination of these businesses might be the best, or it's really just individually, right? Trying to assess valuation, growth, and risk all balancing the three.
You want to look at them individually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So clearly in the US and in developed markets, we're starting to see rises in rates, particularly in the 10-year in the US in anticipation of inflation. And then the market's pricing in potentially faster reaction by the Fed. But in emerging markets, you've recently seen Brazil, Turkey, Russia, they've all actually started to increase rates to fight off potential increases in inflation. How are you impacted as a growth manager in emerging markets from this current spike in rates?
Rising rates generally reflects a rosier outlook for the economy. But sometimes countries, central banks, they do their rate hikes in a more defensive way, meaning they are basically, you know, trying to raise rates to fend off currency weakness and potential inflation. So that generally is the situation in Latin America. We mentioned the increase in debt pile. So Brazil is actually one example. They've added to their government debt quite meaningfully. I think you have to be careful going forward with countries like this. When you talk about the inflation challenge, the market is focusing on sort of the value sectors, commodities, but that is mainly focusing on the origin of inflation. But we tend to think longer term, and we focus on which business can actually sustain their margin and growth when there is inflationary pressure. You know, you have to think about which business can pass on the cost pressure to their customers and protect their own margins. So that leads us to discussions about pricing power. They tend to belong to companies with the brand equity, with stickiness with their customers. So the companies that we mentioned before, you know, these consumer companies, these IT services companies are actually very well positioned to withstand the inflation pressure.
It's interesting, you get these short-term market gyrations, which actually they provide a headwind somewhat for stable businesses, and cyclical businesses in the near term have been turning around. But the ironic thing is that these are the businesses that if you're really concerned about inflationary risk picking up, these are the businesses that can manage through it best. So I find that somewhat ironic. How do you think about the opportunity for banks? I mean, clearly that's an area as well that can be positively impacted by a rising rate environment. Mm-hmm. Is that a potential opportunity in this type of environment going forward?
Yeah, you know, it is. But as in any other business, you want to be selective. Banks are intermediaries, so they are trying to pass on their higher funding cost to their customers. But it really depends on, you know, which country and which banks you're talking about. I think there are definitely better ones that will be able to pass on the pressure and achieve higher margin and better growth. So for example, there is UOB, United Overseas Bank, that's based in Singapore, but have a lot of businesses in the rest of the ASEAN region. They should be able to do fairly well. There is HDFC, which is the largest mortgage finance company in India. They are seeing very good demand. They're able to pass on funding pressure and protect their growth. So these are good examples that if you are selective, you should be able to find very good financials to own in a rising rate environment.
So these banks are saying basically from a quality perspective, they can maintain their margins, but at the same time benefit from that faster growth in emerging markets from the loan side. Is that fair to summarize?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe to take a different turn here and to get away from the interest rate discussion, but within emerging markets, it's been more and more publicized about the supply pressures in the semiconductor industry, which, as you know, of course, has a lot of exposure in emerging markets. How do you think about this? Again, kind of putting on your longer term quality growth investor hat. How do you think about this space with the near term challenges, but also from a long term basis?
The near-term challenge in the supply-demand actually highlights something that is quite positive in the semiconductor industry for the long run. That is, you know, there is strong demand and there is limitation in supply. On the demand side, people are becoming more aware that there is such strong demand coming from actually a diverse set of industries. You're talking about your iPhones, your electronics, these are all examples of the proliferation of devices that, you know, actually have semiconductor components as the crucial components that drives the performance. And then you also have cloud, right, which is, you know, where a lot of the computation and communications is happening. And that is definitely powered by semiconductor. And then lately, there's auto, right? The automobile industry is increasingly need semiconductor components, and actually their performance is driven by semiconductor. So that's the demand side. There is definitely a more diverse set of end users and industries. And on the supply side, what we see is there are also positive things happening. There is consolidation happening. For example, in the memory space, the industry has consolidated down to actually three key players. Samsung Electronics, for example, has almost 50% of the market share. And elsewhere in semiconductor, you're also seeing the accumulation of expertise. When the smaller, weaker players get weeded out, the survived companies actually all have very deep expertise. One example I can give is WinSemi in Taiwan. They play in the non-silicon part of semiconductor. They are specialists on this type of material that are seeing increasing use in the age of 5G. So they have 70% of market share in the pure play foundry industry in the non-silicon semi. These are examples of a very good semiconductor companies.
Interesting. So this problem, right, is actually highlighting the positives. It's showing that there's diversity now of more end market exposure within the industry, and it's also consolidated. So this short-term problem actually highlights the longer-term change for the better, I would say, from an investor perspective, correct?
I think so, yes.
Yeah. How about turning to China, Jin, and the recent regulatory focus on the tech industry? Do you think that results in negative long-term impacts for some of the leading businesses there, such as Alibaba and Tencent?
Well, there are some impact, and really depends on the company and the issue. When you talk about Alibaba, I think there are some issue with regard to how they treat their customers, the merchants. In the past, there have been to choose only their platform and being exclusive and not be on their competitor's platform. So that kind of behavior will be curbed. But if you think about the longer term, this is still a very large franchise, and it's still the largest platform when you measure the revenue. So it still has a very strong position in e-commerce in China. But if you look at the other businesses, Tencent, for example, right? They're less affected by this kind of competitive issues. Their exposure in the finance business is smaller, and also mostly to payment as versus lending. So that is definitely a little away from the focus of the regulators. But if we look at the internet sector more broadly, actually, if you look at some of the smaller names, they are away from the regulatory pressure. And there are actually very good businesses. For example, there's Autohome, which is the leading platform for the automobile vertical. If you want to search what kind of car you want to buy, this is the biggest platform to be on. And for the auto companies, if you want to highlight your product, this is the platform to be on. So there are good businesses that have carved out their very strong niche. Autohome is such a company that will have a lot of growth, particularly in the lower tier cities in the years to come.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, in the near term, you would say uncertainty is picked up from a political risk perspective.
Yeah.
In the long term, it's manageable, but maybe in the short term, Baba seems to be a little more exposed than Tencent. And then there's still other companies that dominate platforms that really aren't in the crosshairs of the government today that are still plenty investable. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. And lastly, Jin, India is a very interesting country. It always has been, a closed economy and has been a great place to find diversity within emerging markets. But when you look over the last 2 years, it's probably one of the most volatile, from being hit the hardest by the pandemic, but also being forecast to recover the fastest. What are you seeing there? And are you seeing signs that this is, this is kind of consensus, but is that actually happening?
Recovery is well underway. And we started this conversation by saying EM is a very large and diverse place, but India itself, right, is a very large and diverse country. So we see really different kinds of businesses. We mentioned the IT services businesses before, HCL, TCS, these companies. They basically are responding to global demand. Your Fortune 500 companies, they're taking care of they're IT services companies, and they're deeply entrenched with these companies now. But then, you know, if you look at the domestic demand, right, there are also very good companies. We mentioned the HDFC. There are also a few very good banks like Kotak Mahindra Bank and the HDFC Bank. These are well positioned to take care of the domestic demand. You stick with these good companies through thick and thin, and I think patient investors will be rewarded in the long run.
Well, Jen, that's our time for this quarterly podcast, but I just wanted to thank you again for your time and your valuable insights. From your comments, I would just say from a high level, emerging markets is still an investable category to find long-term growth opportunities. We're certainly feeling better in 2021 than we did last year, but the world, in particular emerging markets, it's not in even recovery mode. And you have to be active, and you constantly have to be able to assess, you know, growth and what you're paying for and what kind of risk you're taking. So thank you all for listening in. We hope you're all healthy and well and on the road to more normal times ahead in 2021. Thank you.
Disclosure. This recording is for information purposes only, and nothing contained in this recording should constitute a solicitation or offer or a recommendation to buy or sell any investment instruments, to effect any transactions, or to conclude any legal act of any kind whatsoever. Except as permitted under applicable copyright laws, none of this information may be reproduced, adapted, uploaded to a third party, linked to, framed, performed in public, distributed, or transmitted in any form by any process without the specific written consent of Vontobel Asset Management. To the maximum extent permitted by law, Vontobel will not be liable in any way for any loss or damage suffered by you through use or access to this information, or Vontobel's failure to provide this information. Our liability for negligence, breach of contract, or contravention of any law as a result of our failure to provide this information or any part of it, or for any problems with this information, which cannot be lawfully excluded, is limited, at our option and to the maximum extent permitted by law, to resupplying this information or any part of it to you, or to paying for the resupply of this information or any part of it to you. Keep in mind that past performance is not a reliable indicator of current or future performance, and forecasts are inherently limited and should not be relied upon as an indicator of future performance.